Malcolm Honlein with us. Time for the weekly update. Malcolm Honlein, Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, with us Fridays at this time for the weekly update. Mr. Honlein, welcome back to JM and the AM.
Thank you. In the midst of these very eventful days and weeks, it's good to be with you.
I appreciate that very much. How did Israel pull this off? We're hearing different details, that this was months in the making, that they're extremely patient, the Israeli intelligence forces and decision makers, and that they finally had this opportunity to take out one of the few, or several, I should say, to put it the right way, that they took out this week. How did this operation go in Iran?
Well, you're right that it had been well planned and well executed. There are a lot of theories about how it was executed. You noticed the statements yesterday by Israeli military, including the defense minister, that Israel only carried out one air operation, and that was in Beirut against the Hezbollah leader.
Right.
And that is being interpreted. There was a lot of Rashi and Tosfos on his comment now, and people assessing whether and exactly who executed the attack, because there's very few people could have known where he would be, Haniyeh would be at that hour, at that time. He was moved by the Iranians to this as a safer place, and whether that Israel could have placed a month before, even weeks before, a bomb in that location. The question is, how would they have known and exactly when he would be in the room? So while it's certainly possible, and Israel has pulled off, you know, incredible intelligence operations in the past, there's certainly a lot of speculation. There's good reason for Haniyeh, for the Iranians wanting Haniyeh out of the way, because he was in the midst of negotiating, and some people said reached a deal with Abbas in under the auspices of the Chinese negotiations in Beijing, and was about to sign. He was invited as a special guest to the events in Tehran and was taken out there. I think it's certainly going to lend itself to a lot of theories, conspiracy theories,
and that would have led to what? Hamas being under the leadership of the PA? Like, what would that have led to?
What it would have led to is that after this, it enshrines the role of of Hamas with the PA in the future governance. It would not subject them to be under the control of. But as you know, Abbas has been always very resistant to it and considers Hamas an enemy as well, because it threatens them. But it would have meant that the war ended. Hopefully, Sinwar getting caught, maybe a few others. And by the way, there've been some high-level kills over the last 48 out of 72 hours, even last week, that don't get much notice, but very critical people in the October 7th attack, some of whom hid under the guise of being Al Jazeera correspondents, were taken out. And today another key operative was taken out in Gaza. So those things are getting overshadowed by the...
Plus Deif that Israel confirmed they were responsible for.
Well, this was the eighth attempt on his life by Israel. And his elimination, if you look at how they took out this one building in the midst of a block of buildings, and I think that's why there was a muted reaction, because it was clear that it was a pinpoint strike. And again, demonstrates that they have the intelligence, so it could be that applies to the Haniyeh event as well. I'm just telling you about some of the speculation that's going on. And the Iranians do not want to see a deal between Haniyeh and Abbas. So they would have a stake in wanting to eliminate Haniyeh as well at this time. The Russians certainly don't want the deal at this time. It will limit all of their roles, and the Ayatollah still carries the dream of destroying Israel, and at his age may say that this is the opportunity and use this as an excuse. I know from people on the ground, that anti-aircraft guns have been placed in various places in Tehran, that there are some missiles that have been moved into the Tehran area, that the scuttlebutt there is pointing in various directions as to who is responsible. He wanted the excuse. The Ayatollah may have wanted this under any circumstances.
So a Hamas PA alignment weakens Iranian stronghold over terrorist organizations like Hamas. Is that the way?
Is that potential?
If they lose influence or lose any potential leadership, then they're totally against the deal. That makes sense. But going back for a moment to the speculation, etc. If we do acknowledge that, boy, oh boy, this was a very complicated mission, even for Israeli intelligence to carry out, and if we acknowledge that there are people in Iran who wanted him eliminated, can't we just say that Israel and those who are against the Iranian government, who, quasi work with Israel, are the ones who carried out the operation?
You absolutely could. And I'm saying to you that what is interesting is Israel's response, and that doesn't take credit, even though they did for the other attacks, Al-Stis and others. Second, to say that they did not carry out any attacks beyond the one in Beirut on that day. But they only said aerial, so it could be that it was placed there by people in Iran, either agents or allied groups, or those who hate Hamas as well. The anger against the government of Iran is very great now, as you know, and they can turn out a lot of people for a demonstration. It doesn't reflect where the majority of the people are, and the speculation is just fun for people outside, but the stakes are very high regardless, and I think this weekend could be very telltale.
Yeah.
And we could see, I think that the likely scenario would be that they activate their proxies, especially the Houthis, maybe the Iraqi and Syrian militias that are under Iranian control, and ultimately and in Gaza, of course, and then Hezbollah and Iran would act. They could mount hundreds of rockets, as we saw last time, and there are reports of mobilizations around the country. Again, it could be a show, could be many things. I don't want people to draw conclusions. I just wanted people to think about the interesting aspects that experts are looking at.
And, of course, we know the enemy's affinity toward Shabbat and Motzei Shabbat, which we've seen plenty of in the last 76 years, that they utilize that opportunity on many occasions, including the one right before the beginning of the summer. So what practically is happening in Israel? Because we've seen and heard reports about hospitals being moved underground, people leaving a lot, and that's, of course, a reflection of what you just said. The Houthis, I assume their primary target would be southern Israel. If not, then please correct me. And, of course, we've heard about yeshivot and other institutions leaving the northern part of Israel to go back to Jerusalem. How are both civilians and the government preparing for what may happen?
Well, they're very widespread. There are very widespread actions being taken in various parts of Israel, as you noted. I know in Sfat, for instance, they were giving out generators and extension cords this morning. I know that in the north, most the houses are still empty, and other people have been evacuated. And we see movement in the south as well, populations. The poor people of Israel are exhausted by all of this, and part of the intention here is to put people on edge. It is to put them under constant pressure, and this is unfortunately a reality Israel can't speculate about. They have to deal with it. The hospitals have to deal with it. I know Rambam Hospital has accommodations for hundreds and hundreds of people underground. They built facilities underground for moments like this. There will have to be special precautions at things like the rigs, the oil rigs, which would be an easy target and a likely target. And there are, one, you can't even think of all the complexities that are involved when you're talking about having to protect with a small army and and divide your forces, because it's not just against Hezbollah and the possibility of an attempted invasion. It's not just in Gaza, the same thing, but it's also the West Bank. And we know that, you know, Shomron, they've been organizing. Israel has been operating. They've confiscated mountains of weapons. They have made arrests. They have found the infrastructure, a lot of it. And thank God for all of this. Since before October 7th, they've been doing it, because if not, we would have had a third front that would have been very deadly and very dangerous. I think, you know, while there's a lot of criticisms and people speculating still about October 7th, we have to give credit for where there have been preemptive moves. And certainly in the last weeks, these pinpoint strikes have been so amazing that they took out in Beirut that single unit in a neighborhood. And the, you know, so the world can't say that there's collateral damage, because talking about all that other stuff, and it's exactly what the U.S. has said, you know, do more limited targeted operations, though the others were necessary. And they're still uncovering new tunnels. People don't even know, huge tunnels in some cases. It's unbelievable how much infrastructure. You have to dig up the whole area, the whole of Gaza, to uncover all of these facilities.
Let's go back to last Shabbos for a moment. Terrible tragedy, the 12 children, God knows how many injured beyond those who were killed in this episode up north. Was the enemy aiming for a soccer field full of children? Are these random rockets that there's so many of them they could land anywhere? What do we know about that specific attack?
So we don't know the intent yet, but the Druze community people should know. I know they're sort of mysterious to people. They are loyal citizens of Israel. They serve with distinction in the army. A number of them were killed in Gaza just in the since October 7th. They are fiercely loyal. They are divided on both sides of in the Golan and in Syria also. There's a large community. The Syrian government has been treats them very oppressively. They're also dissed by the Muslim generally, by the Muslim communities. So this is an amazing community. Their economic conditions have been bad, but people donated money to build this field for them. I've gone up there many times to visit with them, with the sheikh, with the big mustache that you've seen. In fact, he had a lunch for us. He brought in the rub from up in the Golan, kosher his place, in order to for us to be able to eat. And I mean, they're just remarkable people in many respects. This was an attempt to, you know, I don't believe that they were targeting the soccer game. They were targeting Majdal Shams in general. And there was a military base on the top of the hill, which they say was the real target. But one doesn't know until, you know, we do the postmortems and get more information as to what the intent was. But the result was very clear, and you know, they just found during the week one more body was directly hit of a 12-year-old, and they the community is in terrible shape. Obviously, this such a loss, and a lot of children who were wounded.
And their attitude when Israeli officials and military officials visit them now in the aftermath of this, they still maintain that loyalty and appreciation?
They do. I'm not saying that there isn't some anger or some resentment, but yes, they do. But they continue to pay a price, and they are very loyal, and they continue to serve. And young Druze, you know, enlist right away, and not all, but I think the vast majority do serve. And it's you know, again, it's not something that's widely known. And for those who have visited there and met these people, know what I'm talking about. And others generally don't go there.
It caused the prime minister, obviously, to leave the United States a bit earlier than planned. What could you tell us about those meetings? You know, it was there was very little revealed. Some of them had not even taken place when we spoke last week. Very little revealed. Give us the rundown on the meeting with President Biden, the meeting with Vice President Harris, and the meeting with former President Trump.
So the only meeting that hadn't taken place when we spoke last week was the Trump meeting, right, which seemed to have gone well, and they received them very warmly, and discussions, I understand, were good. You know, there was some tension between them, and it seems that that has been dissipated, though Trump is known to, you know, not forgive or forget, but I think in this case he does. He spoke very warmly and has been defensive of Israel. And his rallies and other occasions. I think the meeting with the president was not didn't seem to have any spectacular result. But the communications, and look, they known each other for 40 years, and they, you know, they know each other. It's fault and everything, and it wasn't a question of having to be introduced. With Kamala Harris, obviously the relationship is not the same, and the body language, you know, which was interpreted when they came out of the meeting, wasn't exactly warm. But the and in the substance, I mean, they did a readout, and it sort of had some harsh tones to it. But overall, she made supportive statements of the relationship with Israel and the, quote, ironclad, a term I'm really getting tired of. Because but when we talk about things, people also have to look at what's happening on the ground with the CENTCOM. And 12 American ships have been deployed near Israel. And the public statements by the Secretary of Defense and others that they will defend Israel if they're assaulted, and translating that into the movement of the ships. And the head of CENTCOM has been visiting Israel every 2 weeks. He has an amazing relationship with the leadership of the IDF, Kirillis, and people should remember his name, and the time will come to thank him or acknowledge him. But the fact is that you have aircraft carriers and others sitting there and saying that if you attack, we will engage to defend Israel. And that is a reality, and people should monitor the movements of ships, which it is reported.
And those 12 ships left after the episode in Iran? Like, this was good. Once Israel, in other words, those 12 ships are a reaction to the situation that Israel may now be facing over the next few days. Wow.
Overall, some of them are there. The aircraft carrier was there, and as you know, I spoke about it on the air. And when they removed one of them,
see, that's why it's so hard to really criticize the current administration. And I'm not saying that other administrations wouldn't have the same reaction in terms of the ironclad support of Israel. But I mean, the proof's in the pudding, right? I mean, when you see weaponry and defense mechanisms moving toward the Middle East with an obvious intention to help Israel, I mean, that says it all, right, Malcolm?
It says a lot, and that's why I mention it, because those are the things that don't get credited and that don't get mentioned, whether it's a decision of the CENTCOM, but I don't think he could do it without the approval of the Secretary of Defense. Certainly, they couldn't redeploy in the way they are in such a large scale, but at the same time, we still see reports that ammunition and weapons are being held up, and not just the 2,000-pound bomb, which is being described as a 200-pound bomb. That is not the case. But it's beyond that. It's other munitions, and Israel does have a shortage. I think the United States has a shortage, too. There are only two factories left in the United States that manufacture ammunition. And as you know, many other countries are cutting off Israel weapon supplies to Israel, even at this critical time. Germany was considering it, but it decided not to. Britain also did not move through with the total cutoff, though they I think supply less than 2% of the weaponry.
Oh, that's
Israel.
Interesting, because if you follow social media, it sounded like the Britain was was dead set against it. That was it. That it was, whatever they provide for Israel is now over.
The new government was moving in that direction, but it was postponed. It was not stopped. It was just postponed. And could be implemented at any time. And again, there's a lot of murky stuff, because this is not stuff that people write about, talking about generally. And Israel certainly doesn't want to project that it has the vulnerabilities and therefore has to husband its resources. And they did stockpile weapons for Gaza, for the war in Gaza, but for a two-front war, let alone a three-front war, will be very different. Right. So, we have to see what I think the Iron Dome and defensive weapons will continue to be supplied. But what Israel, and we had about $1 billion worth of equipment prepositioned in the Negev, and that was moved to Ukraine and was not replenished. And this is a stockpile for American troops, but Israel in time of war was allowed to draw down on that. Right. And those stockpiles were depleted early on.
It's America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program, heard on listener-sponsored digital radio. Around the world, the web at NachumSiegel.com and the Nachum Siegel Network, and of course, on the beloved NSN app. Malcolm Homeline, Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. We call this the weekly update. You know, there's some panic out there. I don't know if you're feeling it, but I certainly get this type of reaction. First of all, there's the whole thing where, you know, it seems the vast majority of Israelis would like Donald Trump to win this election. Okay, I get that. And in general, there's some uncertainty about the record on Israel of Kamala Harris. Would that be fair to say, Malcolm? And you followed her as she was coming up through the ranks. I mean, her voting record support. I mean, what is it fair to say that it's a question mark at the minimum?
I would say that there are a lot of questions that have to be answered. People last night, I don't know, were speculating that she has a more personal commitment to Israel than Biden. I don't think that that is correct. Biden has a long history and record as chairman of Foreign Relations Committee.
I think the real issue is more than Obama or not, because people are like, you know, we survived 8 years of Obama and he had a certain attitude toward Israel. If she's not worse than him, then, you know, hopefully, you know,
You don't know what the inner workings were in the Obama administration. They were not always in lockstep. And I've talked to the then vice president about it several times. And, you know, because I've known him for more than 40 years, he always confided in me, and not while he was president, but when he was vice president. So I think we should put the Biden factor on the side and just look in absolute terms. And everybody sees that she's making a play for the votes in Michigan and the two-state solution, Michigan, Wisconsin, et cetera, et cetera. If she knew that, according to the latest studies, that there are more Jews who go to vote in Michigan than Arabs, not the population size, the actual vote.
Right.
Now, it could be different this year. There are a lot of minorities, communities, who are going to sit this election out because they don't like either of the candidates. You know, so this is a situation in total flux. I think predictions about the outcome, when you see the bump she got from the post-nomination, that raising $200 million, I mean, these are indications, but...
Yeah, plus she has a convention coming up.
But let's see what happens after the convention when things settle down and when the real campaigns only begin after Labor Day. Now, she didn't have the 1 year, 2 years running that most candidates, you know, have.
Right.
She was in office. She will be measured by her performance in office.
And she never got beaten up in a primary.
And she didn't have to go on the debate stage and face Trump or face her Democratic colleagues like she did last time. And if you look at some of those videos that are being shown now, of what Biden did with her in the debates and pressed her and try to expose her records and stuff, which is what happens in every election. So I think that it reinvigorated the party. I think that, that for the Republican strategists, going after Biden was a mistake. They were much better off running against him than against her,
right,
at least before. But let's see whether it sustains once she has to start defending her positions. And if it's just going to be a campaign without debates, it'll be much easier. But I think if it really gets to the, you know, really nitty gritty, and it could be very interesting.
Aside from raising money and obviously paying careful attention to what there is to support in Israel this time, there's plenty of important causes to support, as we know. One of the only things the extremely Israel-loving crowd in the United States and other parts of the world can do is obviously visit Israel. And we encourage people to do so. And obviously the listenership of this show, I think you'd agree, you know, has a great desire to get there as often as possible, and some are able to do so and some are not, and we understand that. The fact that so many airlines, again, have now canceled the flights to Israel, and the limited number of flights plus the extreme cost is making this one thing that we can do extremely difficult. What is your reaction to this list of airlines that, again, this week have pulled out?
So it goes beyond just Delta and United and British and others. Now more and more are going to suspend their travel. Then it takes them a while. They don't just flip the switch and start flying again the next day. There are still European airlines flying some. It's likely that that will stop. Some of them will stop as well. Others will continue. Even the flights to Dubai have been greatly reduced. And part of the problem is Al Al is extremely expensive, and as the others and the demand goes up for those seats, they will become more expensive. Unfortunately, we don't have competitive Israeli airlines anymore flying. So it's a natural thing. Maybe their insurance companies demand it. Maybe other reasons why they, you know, decided to do it. But it's not an irrational decision on their part. If you see the Beirut airport is basically closed, and no flights going into Lebanon either, and even flights to Jordan have been reduced, I'm told. So we can't look at everything as just as being somehow a discriminatory move. It is safety and it is concern.
Yeah, I'm just asking practically. You know, this is one of the only things that the diaspora Jewish community can do, and obviously we're completely hamstrung by this whole system at the moment.
Well, I think people can take the money they would have spent on the ticket, either wait till we get closer to Sukkot and Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. We have to make sure that as soon as there are availabilities that people go, it's terrible. People don't even think about the businesses. They think about what's happened in the north, and they know that people there have suffered, and in the south, the farmers and others have suffered greatly. But without tourism, you see, stores will go out of business or closing for now, at least temporarily, and the hotels suffer for it. They have domestic tourism, but internal tourism, but they don't have enough foreign tourists who go and spend money. I know it's hard to get tickets now because of the cutback in the airlines, but you're absolutely right. This is one of the most important things we do. It has tertiary and not only double impact because of all the businesses. And we have to think. I spoke to a guy who owns a vineyards in the north. They've been completely burnt because there was a rocket fire. And he said it's not just when the war ends, but it takes 3 years or 3.5 years till they can produce grapes again.
Wow.
And this is long-term impact. The hotels in the north, the businesses in the north have been closed down now for almost a year. Many people may not go back to the north. It would be terrible. It would be devastating if, in fact, that's the impact. That is a victory for the Hezbollah. It's what they want to do. They want to depopulate and cause internal disruptions. So I think, you know, people will have to think of the consequences. I think you have to be scrutinize any of the appeals. There are, unfortunately, people who are unscrupulous in these kind of instances and raise money for equipment and stuff for the army. Some of whom are not providing equipment that they can really use, and it just has to be disposed of because it doesn't meet the quality of what they need. So just check it out. I think people should give. I think it's a time to give much more for the schools. You know, the Gary yeshivas in the north yesterday announced that they're relocating to Jerusalem. All these things cost money. They have to get facilities. All of these things we don't think about, but it's very complicated.
Malcolm, I think I heard confirmation of one for sure. I don't know about, but were both of the Al Jazeera journalists who were killed by Israeli airstrikes this week, were both of them accused of aiding and abetting the enemy, being involved in October the 7th and being involved in the holding of kidnapped hostages in Gaza?
I don't know about holding of kidnapped hostages, but they were both involved. And they operate under the guise of being Al Jazeera correspondents, so then they can say Israel killed X number of journalists.
And then the whole journalism community goes crazy, which, you know, if they were sincere journalists, I get that. But it's amazing. They're hiding behind the press, basically.
And you have to see how many people are registered as Al Jazeera journalists.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, it's enough to cover the whole Middle East, Africa, Europe, and Asia. And so, you know, Al Jazeera is a wholly owned subsidiary of Qatar. And as one Arab leader said, Qatar is a country built on a TV station. They hate Al Jazeera. Al Jazeera has instigated against Sisi. They've instigated, obviously, in Gaza, but they instigate against the Saudis and the UAE. They are, and they're accepted. You know, people quote them and cite their reports because they are on the ground. But people should be very wary of anything that comes with an Al Jazeera thing. And here, the number of them that have been killed, and because of their involvements, not because Israel's targeting Al Jazeera.
Right. Is it possible that, I mean, we, some of us joke about Russian involvement in the American political process. Is it possible that Putin agreed to yesterday's deal in order to prop up the Biden administration more because he and others would like to make sure that Trump doesn't become president? That's way too crazy a theory.
So the timing is interesting, and I've seen speculation. I've been told it by people who monitor Russia and other things, raised these questions that maybe it was timed also for cover or diversion from what's happening with the Haniyeh and post-Haniyeh events. That we know that the negotiations were rushed in the last weeks. Maybe they felt that there was an opportunity while President Biden is still in office, and they don't want to lose it. And if there's a war, then it would have made it more difficult. There was only one guy there that I think Putin really cared about, who was FSB. And you know, I'm sure people will analyze the trade. I think it's wonderful that Evan and the others came back. Anytime we reunify and bring back Americans, it's good. Yeah. But the question is, what price did we pay? And was this, what is Putin, who's very shrewd and just doesn't do things, what was his agenda for doing it now?
Finally, Malcolm, for those who need a positive word, and for those of us who are people of faith, it's always easy to come up with a positive word because we know ultimately who's protecting all of us around the world, and especially our brothers and sisters in Israel. The most recent headline, it just came out 30 minutes ago, Israelis brace for a 1,000-rocket multi-proxy attack. I don't even know if it's worthwhile to print headlines like this. I don't know if it's maybe it helps people prepare. I don't know. There has to be some positive element as the Jewish world becomes more and more tense on this Erev Shabbos that you could treat us to.
Yes. Well, first of all, as I said, it would likely be a multiple assaults from the proxies, the Ring of Fire that Iran established, and which I've talked about with you on this show for 7 years, 8 years, 9 years. We've been warning about the buildup and about what was happening, the strategy behind it, that to encircle Israel, whereas we should have been encircling Iran, which would have been possible, but we don't. The West did not do and still continues not to do, and we continue to still provide resources to them, even though more and more sanctions are being applied, but we're not doing what we should. In the meantime, they're moving ahead with their nuclear program. Thank God they don't have fixed bomb now, but they have submarines, they have other equipment, their air force is very weak still. That will change with time too, but they have really developed their missile capacity, as they demonstrated last time. So when you add what the Houthis have been able to do, and especially that attack on Tel Aviv, which means that they traveled such a huge distance and were able to penetrate though most of their the four out of the five things, the projectiles were taken down. So the headline is a screaming headline. It's, I think, unfortunate for the people of Israel. They know the score. They don't need to be energized. But I was this week at the Christians United for Israel. I spoke there in Washington. They had their annual conference with thousands of Christians there from all the 50 states. And if you want to know why you can be optimistic, when you see the friends that we have who went to the Hill, they take no prisoners. I only wish that sometimes our own organizations and community would react with the vehemence and the commitment and the unchallenged willingness to stand up for Israel as they did, listening to Lindsey Graham and many others who were there, Nikki Haley and members of Congress across the board, that the support remains, the American people still remain overwhelming supportive of Israel. We have to do more to hold to account. We've seen already that the universities and stuff are being prepared for a very hot summer. We're going to see at the Democratic Convention, I think, much more elevated activity. The fact that the demonstrations are taking place here and the school buses in Montreal, statements adopting resolutions against Israel, discriminatory measures against children in public schools, Jews, universities, some of whom have tried to modify or hide their transgressions and think the ivory tower will protect them. We have to expose them. We have to continue the pressure, get people to hold back on their contributions. There's much that we can do for our front. This is our front to in helping Israel, in addition to the funds we give and the people who volunteer in Israel. All of those things extremely important now. The more of it we do, the better, but also to take on the local front. And I'm telling you, what we have uncovered about the foreign funding, whether it's Qatari, Chinese, Iranian involvement on their campuses, the sleeper cells that are here, all of the challenges. And, you know, we've already become inured when there's an attack and a school bus is set on fire or there's they raise Hezbollah flags. I saw the Union Station when they tore down the flag and set it on fire. I was one block away where a Capitol Hill, a policeman, actually a New York policeman, who came over to me to walk me, but he said, I can only walk you to the barrier. I'm not allowed to go beyond that. I think you should take off your yarmulke. And I didn't, but he didn't do it in a negative way. He was doing it
for your safety.
And he said I could not, he could only go, and he walked me literally even beyond where he should have. But he was truly concerned. Yeah. And he said to me that they just physically assaulted some people.
Yeah.
And these roving gangs, I'm telling you, were scary. I saw them. I was standing behind a barrier with some police. And they, you know, made gestures and walked past. And it when you see that firsthand up close, you know that there's something really wrong. And I credit the police and the fact that they had to bring in New York police and other police from outside to help protect our capital, and that these hateful messages were taking place, you know, within eyesight of the Senate, the House, the Capitol building. There's a lot to think about.
Yeah, that's for sure. Thank you so much for your time. Have a wonderful Shabbos.
Great job.
We'll speak again next week. Yeah. Malcolm Honlein, Weekly Update, Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. My God. You need to take a deep breath after that conversation, and we pray that our brothers and sisters in Israel will, in fact, of course, always be safe, but especially over the next couple of days. Their safety is the responsibility of the Israel Defense Forces, and of course, ultimately, their safety is a result of the IDF, the police forces, and of course, the one above.